You're recording, and so just a reminder to speak into your microphones.
All right, thank you all for joining us. Today is January 17th, it is 8:36. We're gonna call this meeting to order. Thank you for joining us in this new room. This is all new for us, so bear with us. It's a little bit different. We're not used to sitting in a line here. First, just want to remind everyone to either turn off or mute your electronic devices. I'd then like to read the mission statement for our board. The veterinary board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, as well as the welfare of animals by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. I'm now
going to
have Victoria do the roll call for us.
Dr. Byrne?
Here.
Ms. Krager?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James?
Here.
Is walking in. Mr. Lohi?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Sullivan?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
Dr. Wright is absent. You have quorum.
Okay. We've got quite an agenda today, so we're going to do our best to stay on task here. So we are starting with section number two, the initial investigative review and action on the following cases. We are starting with number five, which is 2415 in regards to Hannah Schaefer, DBM. And Tracy, if you can read the case summary.
Okay, no problem. So case 2415, the complainant is Robert Orzoco and the respondent is Hannah Schaefer, DVM. On July 4th, 2023, Princess, a 12-year-old female domestic short hair cat, was presented to respondent for a dental cleaning. Diagnostics were performed after sedation with DKT due to the cat's temperament. Approximately 30 minutes later, another dose of DKT was administered. The dental cleaning was performed and the cat was non-responsive. Naloxone and antacetin were administered. The cat remained unresponsive. At that point, care was transferred to respondent's associate, Dr. Fosbaugh. A short time later, respondent and Dr. Fosbaugh transported the cat to an emergency facility for advanced post-anesthesia care. Upon arrival, diagnostics were performed and the cat was extubated. Upon being extubated, the cat was paddling. Her pupils were myotic and had some light response. Overnight, the cat's condition declined, requiring re-intubation. Complainant was advised to visit the cat. Upon arrival, complainant was advised that the cat's seizure activity and blood pressure changes. Complainant declined further care and elected to humanely euthanize the cat. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board find ARS 322232, number 22, medical incompetence, administering two doses of DKT at the same dose. Dr. Schaefer was unsure if all of the first dose was administered to the cat due to the cat's temperament, and performing a dental on a geriatric, possible hyperthyroid fractious cat prior to obtaining blood results and when closing early before a holiday weekend. That motion was approved with a vote of 4-0. A second motion was made, and it was moved and seconded that the board find ARS 322232 number 21, failure to maintain adequate records of veterinary services provided with respect to the time frame the IV catheter was placed and blood was collected, the time frame the dental procedure was performed, and the committee felt that these time frames were unrealistic and post-op vitals were reportedly documented incorrectly, and the medical record states that the cat's heart rate was 60 beats per minute, and the respondent has stated that it was not that low, that it was more like 100 to 120 beats per minute. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-1, with Dr. Rye opposed.
Thank you, Tracy. We do not have the complainant here, however, we do have Dr. Schaefer and her attorney. They're both already sitting in your spot, so go ahead, you can have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you, members of the board. I am here. Let me start my time starting by watching this. Otherwise, I tend to run on. Good morning, members of the board. I'm here on behalf of Dr. Hannah Schaefer today, and I'm requesting the board to either dismiss the complaint or to issue a letter of concern. I'm primarily going to focus my attention on the recommendations of the investigative committee. The first recommendation was to find violation of ARS 2232-22 for incompetence for administering 2 doses of DKT and then performing dental on the geriatric, possibly hypothyroid fractious cat. As to the first issue regarding the administering 2 doses of DKT, even the primary chair of the investigative committee admitted that she does this all the time. It's routine. If the situation arises where you do not believe you have adequate sedation for the initial dose, particularly when dealing with a fractious cat, and you can't determine whether you actually were able to get the entire dose injected, I believe the penalty used was sometimes something sprays outside the cage so that it doesn't get into the animal, that it is reasonable and appropriate to administer a second dose when you return to determine the cat has not been adequately sedated for the dental procedure. I also have 2 affidavits from additional other veterinarians that I can present today that establish that it is not unreasonable to present, actually to use the second dose under those circumstances. As finding fact, performing the dental on a geriatric, possibly hyperthyroid fractious cat, there's no indication that this cat was suffered from hyperthyroidism. If you look at the dental, if you look at the entire set of records, this cat was never tested for any thyroid symptoms at any point in time. He was never treated, or she was never treated for any thyroid symptoms either. The standard of care simply does not require a thyroid test in these circumstances. She had been seen and treated numerous times at this practice without any issues. The standard of care further doesn't require the veterinarian to wait for the lab results before performing a dental procedure. Again, if you look back at the continuity of all of the treatment of this vet, I mean, of this cat, the cat was always treated before the lab results came back. It was a dental procedure, so there was no concern moving forward. And particularly dealing with a fractious cat like this, they were not able to obtain the blood draw until after they sedated the cat. And if you had to wait for the lab results to come back, then you may have the cat under sedation for a longer period of time, which of course increases the potential risk for an adverse outcome. So we think that that violation is not supported. The only other issue I want to address is the investigative committee was concerned that perhaps this was a rushed procedure because it was a holiday. They referred to it as a holiday weekend, but July 4th is actually a Tuesday. So it was simply a day in which the clinic was closing early, but it was closing at 4, not at 2. And had there not been a consequence or a complication, Dr. Schaefer had plenty of time to sedate, have the procedure done, and recover the cat and discharge to the patient's parent before 4 o'clock. As to the second allegation, that the investigative committee simply felt some of the times were unrealistic in the records. The vet tech who catheterized Princess and obtained the blood draw has been timed. She's a very experienced vet tech nurse, and she can complete this task within 90 seconds. The dental cleaning is documented starting at 12:45 and being completed at 12:47, which again, the committee thought was unrealistic. Could these times be off by a minute or two? Possibly. Dr. Schaefer is not the one who put those times in the record. It was done by the vet tech. But if you look back at some of the earlier dental treatments, there was one that was documented as having been done within 5 minutes. So it's not unrealistic that this cat could be fully clean and polished within 2 to 5 minutes. Particularly in light of the fact that the cat had several missing teeth, which is documented in the early treatment records as well. The other issue was the cat's heart rate at extubation. It is documented in the records at 60, but again, that is not an entry that Dr. Schaefer made. It was an entry that the vet tech made. The vet tech has confirmed that she doesn't recall it ever being that low, and it must be a mistake on her part. When Dr. Schaefer came back and entered her note the next day, because of course the events of the day, if you're familiar with them from the complaint, is she actually helped transport the cat to the emergency clinic and remained with the cat there for a while before she came back, and she did not complete her notes until the next day. She didn't review the entire notes to make sure everything was accurate. She entered her notes because this was an upsetting situation for her as well. The outcome of this, of course, was not what Dr. Schaefer would have wanted or expected. Anesthesia can be very difficult, particularly on fractious cats, and there's always a risk when a pet undergoes anesthesia. Without a necropsy, it's simply too speculative to determine what the actual cause of the complication and death was. Banfield paid for the emergency care, and they were willing to pay for the necropsies to provide better answers to the owner and for the veterinarians involved. But Princess's owner declined the necropsy, so we do not have an answer for that. So I do believe the appropriate outcome for this complaint is, again, either a dismissal or a letter of concern based upon the issues in the investigation. Thank you. Dr. Schaefer is here to answer any questions that anybody may have as well.
Thank you. And as a reminder, we do not have a complaint with the president. And Dr. Nosley, you are the case lead.
Okay, thank you. The issue in this case concerns the records and then the what actually happened in the, during the procedure and following. The records in general are very hard to follow. They're not chronological. They have extraneous information, repetitive and missing information. But particular to this case, there's conflicting information in the records versus the materials we have, the narratives and the investigative committee interviews. So there are conflicting statements there. As with the case itself, I think there are many unanswered or incompletely answered questions during the investigative committee. The timeline not really making any rational sense, the drug dosage and administration questions there, some incompleteness in the doctor's notes. And so in this case, I would move to an informal.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to move case 2415 to an informal. Is there any further discussion?
Madam Chair,
yes.
Can I ask the attorney to state his name, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize for that. I saw you staring at it. My name is Cody Hall. I'm a law firm Brian Overwood.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, all those in favor of moving case 2415 to an informal, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also, I think that I forgot to mention that Beth Campbell from the Attorney General's Office is here. They're way over there now, so I apologize. I forgot to mention that. So. Okay, so now we are going to number 16, which is our two packs, and they are related to two other premises inspection items that are on our agenda as well. So we're going to start with number 162469 in regards to Tracy Marvel, DBM. Tracy, if you can read the summary.
Sure. And then case 2469 and 2470, the front load is the same.
Okay.
So, and these were not reviewed by the investigative committee. These were straight to board cases. So for case 2469, the complainant is Alicia Douglas. The respondent is Tracy Marvel, DBM. The complainant is a former employee of Desert Forest Animal Hospital. She expressed concerns with respondent's conduct during her employment. Concerns were that the staff is mandated to use a tourniquet around the neck for feline blood draws. A patient was transferred from operating room to radiology with an open abdomen and exteriorized bladder, then transferred back to the operating room. Linens are not washed between patients. Only disinfectant available is a very dilute Chlorhex spray. A dog with a severe respiratory distress was left unattended in a kennel while the respondent was in surgery. Aseptic technique rarely used. Suture reused for wounds and mass removals. Loose prescription medications are given to employees. Staff would reuse any syringe to send home to clients and to give oral medications in hospital. Aseptic procedures were ignored with Truman, a 15-year-old male West Highland Terrier that was presented to respondent as a walk-in exam for not doing well. Diagnostics were performed. An abscess was lanced and flushed with betadine, and respondent placed a Penrose drain and treated the wound with Panalog. The dog was discharged later that day. And that's the extent of the summary.
Thank you. So we've got, you're okay, are you the respondent or?
I'm Dr. Tracy Marvel.
Gotcha. Okay, go ahead. We can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Board members, I'm Dr. Tracy Marvel. I graduated from CSU and I'm
in Dr. Marvel, would you mind speaking into
Sorry.
The microphone, please? Thank you.
And have been practicing since then. My husband opened Desert Forest in 84, and I joined him in 89, and we practiced there all this time until he passed away. We both, and myself, dedicated our lives to veterinary medicine as well as the care of our clients and patients. I feel like these charges are unwarranted. There have never been any complaints about our infection rates. I would put our, all of our client response, happiness, against anyone. I think we do a good job. I don't know if you guys answer questions. I've never been before the board before. I hope that soon you bring my records and see what we did and all of that. You know, blatantly false that all we have is the Luchlorhexidine, and I don't know, maybe Alicia's not familiar with using cold sterilized instruments for wounds and small growths, but we do that, and that's not a sterilized packet. It's instruments that are sterilized in the dilute chlorhexidine solution that's diluted according to manufacturer recommendations. Everything else, I mean, I hope you can ask me questions and I can clarify if you have any questions about it, but I feel the charges should be dismissed. I love veterinary medicine and I hope to keep practicing because I love my clients and my pets, so.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and let Ms. Frost, if you have any questions, I'll go ahead and have her step back.
No, no, it's fine.
Okay, so you can go ahead and step back now. We will have the complainant, Alicia Douglas, if you'd like to come forward. Thank you for being here today. If you can state your name for the record, and then we can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Yes, hello, my name is Alicia Douglas. I've been a technician for about nine to 10 years, 9.5 years. I was with this hospital for about 3 months, which is when I witnessed all of this. The biggest thing that was a concern was when a tourniquet, which was used, which is normally used for human blood draws, a tourniquet was wrapped around the feline's neck, secured with a hemostat, and then blood was to be collected through the jug. I witnessed patients become cyanotic. I witnessed patients, you know, not tolerate that type of restraint. I elected to use a butterfly catheter and a needle sap in his vein to collect blood on this feline, or a feline, and was reprimanded for not using the technique that they use. I was also not supplied with adequate supplies of butterfly catheters to continue to do safe feline blood draws, so I had to use a syringe, creating false results with blood work, and in regard to the cold sterile, yes, it was a very dilute chlorhexidine solution. Used suture needles, hemostats were put in there. Needle drivers were put in there without proper cleaning. And finally, medications used for like gabapentin or even injectable medications, drawing blood, those syringes were taken apart, rinsed under water, a mild dilute chlorhexidine solution, and then sent home with owners to use for oral medication. That'll be all.
Thank you. You can go ahead and step back.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Frost, you are the lead on these. Can you take the first one, one at a time? Or do you want to have the other person to come forward as well, Dr. Hayter?
Is there a preference from the assistant AG? If I ask to hear from the
Nikki, will you remember to speak into your mic?
Sorry. Is there a preference from the assistant AG if I want to hear from the second respondent?
I think it makes sense to also hear from the second respondent.
Yes, I'd like to do that then.
Okay, great. So now we'll have Dr. Hayter in case 2470. If you could come forward, please. And again, as Tracy stated, this is the same case summary and the same complaint, so we can go ahead and give you 5 minutes to address the board if you state your name for the record.
Okay, Dr. Brian Hayter. I'm the owner of Desert Forest Animal Hospital, and I'm here to speak to the premise violations. You know, I just wanted to start by saying, you know, in general, our background is that we've been operating in Cave Creek in the same location with Dr. Tracy there for 40 years, and we're a real staple of the community. Anybody there will tell you that, you know, it's a word of mouth business. We get clients all the time, you know, they move into town and the neighbors tell them they need to come see us, and we're really there to practice high quality medicine. And I don't want to minimize the violations. I appreciate the opportunity to remediate those and come address those before the committee, and we've done that. All of those items, you guys have the list. We've remediated. Some of them were very quick fixes. We've hired a reverse distributor. And, you know, we welcome any opportunity to improve our practices and continue serving the community. And, you know, that's all I'll say. I'll keep it brief. Thank you so much.
Thank you. There's no questions. You may go ahead and step back. And then, Nikki, go ahead.
Sure. So, I have the two cases, 2469 and 2470. There also is the matter of the premises inspection, which some of that weaves together, so I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to navigate completely separately.
Madam Chair, members of the board, the premise inspection item on the agenda is really something that we would typically do to inform the board of the results of the inspection, and based on the results of this one, you're likely going to request board staff to conduct a follow-up inspection. So it ties to these two cases, and just to provide some background information to possibly substantiate or not the complainant's claims.
So regarding the complaint, you know, we've definitely seen complaints before from former employees, and there is some measurement that has to be done with those complaints, because there's always each person's side of the story and then somewhere in between the truth. And obviously perspective can change when emotions, you know, are involved. As far as the respondents responding to the allegations, those seemed very clear as far as their perception, you know, from the doctor point of view on the cases. But then there are some things that are more procedural that were almost disproved with that premise inspection. And this being a newly acquired practice to the current responsible veterinarian, there were expired items that were over 33 years old, which is beyond me, that how, you know, you would purchase a business and leave those items. So it's great that those are remediated, but some of the concerns weren't completely answered in regard to returned controlled substances, that those aren't kept and those are discarded, but yet they were found on that random premise inspection. I have serious concerns because both respondents did not deny the use of a tourniquet around the neck of a feline. My notes were, do not see cyanotic patients. And so I don't know if any veterinarians here, because all of you have different practice experience. I have never seen that ever. And so I don't know if that concern I should disregard or move that one forward.
I can't say that I've used that in practice.
Make sure you're speaking into your microphone, guys.
So I have not used that technique in blood draws in practice.
Anybody that has?
No, I've heard of that. I've never seen it done. Certainly concerned for that type of restraint. You could lose cats from your restraint. I can't imagine with a tourniquet clamped around the neck and losing a cat or having it get out of your arms. That's my biggest concern with it. But no, I have heard of that, but I've never seen it in any practice I've been in.
As far as loose prescription meds given to employees, and then some of the suture aspects as far as reusing suture, and is it cold sterile, is it dilute betadine, as one respondent said, is it dilute chlorhex? Those are very different things, but yet at the premise inspection, there was no such cold sterile noted. They were in vials, and there's no way to verify
expiration of the materials and who's monitoring that? Were these properly cleaned or disinfected? Again, I think there's very few ways to accomplish that. And if every patient isn't properly tested for a possible infectious disease that could cause a nosocomial infection, then you could have issues. So, I mean, there's just a lot of things that I would love to ask more questions because I'm super confused, slightly concerned. Yes, I mean, I know that Ms. Solomon has the premise inspection piece, but I mean, I think that it would be clear that there needs to be a follow-up there. You can have a great reputation in a community and still not be practicing standard of care, you know, in some areas, because again, 33 years expired suture, you kind of scratch your head a little. I'm going to make a motion, so if y'all have discussion, I make a motion on 2469 to move to an informal. I do have more questions.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to move case 2469 to an informal. Is there any other discussion?
If I could just add that, I mean, I've never seen that technique used before either, although I have heard of it being utilized, and I just think it's, I don't know a better way to put it, but maybe something of an older school technique, right? When I first got into practice, I think it was probably more prevalent than what you see now. I think what happens though is sometimes with those techniques, and even things like Colesterol, I'm being sutured into Colesterol, like that was routinely done when I first got into practice. So it's not necessarily that it's done anymore, but if you haven't ever had an issue with it and you've been doing it that way for a long time, I can see where some of these things may have just lingered over. And I don't want to necessarily say that that means that it's okay. I'm just saying I can see where some of this might have come into play, and whether it falls below the standard of care is what we really have to decide, right? Like, what our concern might be an option in some of these as to staying current with protocols and how we're doing things today. But that's just, I just want to throw that out as an option and totally agree with moving to an informal if you have more questions.
Okay, no further comments? Then let's vote on 2469, moving to an informal. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. So case 2469 will move to an informal. Now case 2470, Tracy?
We did the summary already.
Sorry, yes, no, I meant Nikki. Ms. Frost.
Again, this was, the response didn't really match what was found on the premise inspection, and there were some things that weren't addressed again in the response to some of the violations that were found, and so I have questions on those as far as you know, being a new being the new owner of the practice, why were there so many extremely old supplies and medications and essentially the facility and the condition that it was found in with some cleanliness things, and also again, I just have a question on why that old suture is being reused in a fashion that just is not, again, when I first started in practice, I saw some of those things, but very quickly it fell from favor just because of education from the manufacturers, thankfully, as to why that was poor practice. So anyways, I would like to ask more questions. And I'll make a motion to move it to an informal.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to move case 2470 to an informal. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Motion passes to move case 2470 to an informal. And then Victoria, can we just go ahead and move down to the premise one real quick? So let's just kind of finish that one up. So if you go down to section number six, item number two, board may review, discuss, and take action on premise inspections. We are looking at number C, which is 3R3605 Desert Forest Animal Hospital. Brian Hayter, DVM, is the premise holder, and Ms. Solomon, you are the lead, and Victoria, you can jump in and give us kind of the background as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, the concerns are replete throughout. The extent of the expired supplies is pretty mind-boggling. It's my understanding that they have not had an on-site inspection within the last 5 years. Is that correct, Victoria?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, and standardly, our practice has been if they haven't had one within the last 5 years and they get a negative one, as this one is, we give them a second chance.
Madam Chair, members of the board, there's an overarching law that requires all state agencies that conduct inspections to give a facility a chance to make corrections prior to taking action. There are a few exceptions. I don't believe that any exceptions applied in this matter.
Thank you. So in that case, I would move that we direct staff to re-inspect at the earliest possible time.
Okay. Is that a vote, or are we just simply directing?
Do we need a motion?
I believe you can just direct us.
Correct. Okay. I withdraw my motion and just direct staff to re-inspect at the soonest possible time.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you both for being here.
Madam Chair, could I add to that?
Sure.
Since they're both here, they could listen to some past meetings and see and listen to when we do premise inspections that have the three-peat of the repeat violations, controlled substances in particular.
Yes.
And see why, and make sure that it doesn't happen.
Yes, Mr. Lougheed, if I can just do a quick comment. I think many times with non-controlled substance issues, we give folks sometimes like three strikes and you're out. I think with controlled substances, that needs to be a little tighter, and maybe two strikes before we go to an informal. But at this point, we only have the one inspection in 5 years, so. Follow what we've done in the past and not set precedent unless we have a specific reason to. That's why I directed staff to re-inspect as soon as possible.
Okay.
But I share your concern on controlled substances.
All right. Thank you. Okay, now we are going to our four pack. We're doing number 7, 2418, in regards to Sarah Mayer, DBM. Let's see if we want to read the summary, which is the same for all four of them.
So, yes, do you want to review all four at the same time?
Yes, please.
Okay, so case 2418, 2419, 2420, and 2421, and the summary is the same for all the cases. So the complainant is Christine Marquez. The respondent is Sarah Mayer, Jeff Skaggs, Danielle Powers, and Elaine Holmes. On July 1st, 2023, Zona, a 5-plus-year-old female pit bull mix, was presented to Scottsdale Ranch Animal Hospital due to pain when walking and getting up. The dog was examined and discharged with carprofen and gabapentin. Later that evening, the dog was presented to VCA McCormick Ranch Animal Hospital and Emergency Center due to difficulty walking. Due to concerns for an injury to the spinal cord, radiographs and hospitalization were recommended. The pet owner declined. The dog was discharged after the bladder was emptied and carprofen and pantoprazole was administered. On July 2nd, 2023, the dog was presented to Dr. Skaggs at Animal Medical and Surgical Center due to paraplegia. No pain sensation was noted on exam, and intervertebral disc herniation with spinal cord compression was suspected. Hospitalization with a neurological consultation the following day was recommended. Complainant approved. On July 3rd, 2023, Dr. Powers performed a neurological assessment. Complainant elected to proceed with an MRI. Disc herniation and severe spinal cord bruising were found. The dog underwent a left-sided hemilaminectomy after the associated risks were discussed with the pet owners. On July 4th, 2023, the dog developed a fever which was treated with IV fluids and antibiotics. The dog began breathing with increased effort.
Diagnostics revealed concern for aspiration pneumonia and sepsis, thus treatment was initiated. Complainant was provided an update on the dog's grave condition. In the early morning hours, the dog went into cardiac arrest. CPR was initiated, but was unsuccessful, and the dog passed away. Complainant expressed concerns that unsanitary condition and protocols led to the death of the dog, as well as prolonged anesthesia time. And the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss these issues with no violation. And that was moved with a vote of... I believe that was 4-0.
Monitoring on all of them?
Yes.
Okay. So I'd like to give Ms. Marquez the opportunity to come forward if you wish to address the board.
Sure.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Christina Marquez. I also go by Christy Marquez. So I want to start by thanking the Arizona Vet Board for granting me the opportunity to address you today. I sit before you not just as an advocate for justice, but as a grieving pet owner who has endured an agonizing journey with our beloved dog's owner. From July 2nd to July 5th, Thrive Pet Healthcare, formerly known as Animal Medical and Surgical Center, shattered our trust in veterinary care, leaving us devastated and questioning the ethical standards of what we should expect. In our pursuit for justice for Zona, we sought an independent analysis from Dr. Mahai at Joey's Legacy. Her professional assessment confirmed what we already knew. Malpractice and negligence were responsible for Zona's untimely demise. This affirmation is not just our truth, but a resolute stance we provided to you upon request. As we navigate the events from Zona's initial pain to her tragic passing, a disconcerting pattern of negligence, misinformation, and lack of transparency emerges. Post-surgery optimism quickly turned to despair, fueled by conflicting information regarding anesthesia duration, the cause of aspiration, and now, after the committee hearing, a potential complication for myelomalacia. Our plea extends beyond Zona's case. It calls for a thorough evaluation of leadership within Thrive Pet Healthcare of Scottsdale, formerly known as Animal Medical and Surgical Center. The lack of empathy, ownership, and transparency from the top down must be addressed to prevent future tragedies. We implore the Arizona Vet Board to investigate Dr. Powers, Dr. Skaggs, Dr. Mayers, and all involved technicians and attending vets. Overwhelming evidence of misconduct, negligence, and malpractice demands accountability. Furthermore, we request a reconsideration of incurred charges for services that not only failed to meet expected standards, but also contributed to our pet's untimely demise. We believe it is our right to be relieved of the financial burden associated with substandard care. As we seek justice for Zona, committed to exposing the truth, the integrity of the veterinary profession is at stake. We trust the Arizona Vet Board will uphold its commitment to the ethical treatment of animals. Now, addressing the recent committee hearing is crucial. Out of the four questions posed to me, one targeted my husband's feelings, and that was the first question that was asked. It's recorded, you can listen to it. How does my husband feel about this complaint? That was a degrading and misogynistic approach that sought to invalidate the gravity of my complaint. When I informed the committee that my husband, a direct witness, was ready for questioning, they chose to prioritize a special witness for the vet, claiming myelomalacia as the cause of death. This decision not only questions impartiality of the proceedings, but also adds another layer of concern regarding the transparency of this investigation. Furthermore, it is disheartening to note that the time allocated for me to speak before the board today surpasses the time the committee spent questioning me. This discrepancy raises doubts about the thoroughness and fairness of the committee's evaluation of the complex circumstances surrounding Sona's case. The conflicting narratives presented during the hearing deepen the perplexity of Sona's tragic story. Dr. Powers openly discussed myelomalacia with me before the surgery, citing a 5% chance of Sona developing it and assuring me that she showed no signs of the condition. However, if myelomalacia, an unrecoverable condition, was indeed present, why wasn't this vital information shared? Moreover, if Sona was under sedation for an extended period, why weren't we advised against proceeding with the surgery? The revelation about the duration of sedation came only after Sona's passing, leaving us questioning the transparency of the information provided. Was she under for 7 hours, as Dr. Powers claimed? Was it 5.8 hours, as the anesthesiologist claimed? Or was it 5.6 hours, as claimed by the hospital's liability insurance? Which, to date, we still have no answers to. Instead, we endured watching our beloved pet suffer for over 20 hours. The looming question persists. Was this a tactic to inflate our bill, or was there genuine urgency to proceed with surgery? Did Sona's condition truly pose an immediate life-threatening risk? Or was there a financial motive behind the expedited decision? So you can see how the new narrative presented during the hearing adds to our uncertainty. If myelomalacia indeed caused Sona's death, why did Dr. Mahai, Midwestern University, Thrive Pet Healthcare, and Zurich, Thrive Pet Healthcare's liability insurance, which after receiving a letter of demand from us denied our claim in writing, all state Sona passed due to aspiration pneumonia? How did they get it all wrong in their assessments? The discrepancies demand a thorough examination and highlight the need for clarity in this investigation. In conclusion, my 5 minutes might be up, but my commitment to justice for Sona knows no bounds. The recent committee hearing raised concern, but I implore the Arizona Vet Board to uphold principles of fairness, accountability, and truth, ensuring the integrity of the entire process. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
And Dr. James, you are the lead on this case.
Well, first I want to say sorry for your loss. This is never easy, and then I applaud you for coming before us to rehash everything that happened, because we do understand how difficult that can be. I think, you know, this is going to be a really, really tough case, because ultimately what we know from the necropsy was present, how well potentially some of that was communicated along the way is really where I have the biggest concern. And obviously we don't know along the way exactly what's going on, right? You find that out, and so hindsight's definitely different than what you would know as you were going along. But, you know, I went through each of these doctors individually and kind of trying to say where did I feel there was involvement in more potential issues with the case. And really, in looking at it, I think the only place that I have further questioning is with Dr. Powers, which is around what was the conversation on the prognosis like. We definitely heard differing viewpoints today on that. So I think that is my biggest concern. I think the other doctors in this case worked it as they should have. I think there were at least one documentation of referral to a neurologist even prior to the surgery. So, you know, and aspiration pneumonia and some of the complications that came after that isn't necessarily something that can be controlled. I mean, obviously we do things to prevent it, but it does happen. And so I think, you know, in taking that into account, really my only questioning is around how well we communicated the condition that we were going into surgery for. So any comments before I make a motion? So, in the case of, make sure I get this right, I believe it's 2420, is that Dr. Powers?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the case of 2420, I would make a recommendation that we move to an informal.
Okay. Second. Is there a second? Okay, we have a motion and a second in case 2420 to move to an informal. Is there any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, motion passes.
And then in 2418, 2419, and 2421, I would recommend that we support the findings of the investigative committee with no violations of the practice act rules.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2418.
One question before we vote, Tracy. Are any of these the responsible veterinarian?
I believe it's Dr. Powers, actually.
Okay. There's no further discussion. All those in favor of dismissing 2418, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
2419. Aye. You made motion for all three of them, didn't you?
Can we do it all three together? Or do we need
to?
No.
I made the motion for 2418, 19,
oh, sorry,
21 to find no violations of our practice act.
Okay, sorry. Okay, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Now we are on number 15, 2468, in regards to Dennis Phillip, DBM. Please see if you'll read the front row.
So case 2468, the complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The respondent is Dennis Phillip, DVM. On November 15, 2023, the Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board opened investigation regarding the respondent's conduct as DEA registrant for Nikki's Place Incorporated. DEA conducted an investigation after receiving evidence that the owner of the premises, Kim Elliott, was diverting controlled substances for personal use. At the time of the DEA investigation, Dr. Natalie Schuster was the responsible veterinarian for the premises, and respondent was the DEA registrant. No disciplinary action was taken against the respondent or Ms. Elliott by DEA after the conclusion of the investigation. The respondent implemented new protocols, obtained a new safe, and prohibited Ms. Elliott from having access to the safe. Respondent also submitted a new premises application for a responsible veterinarian for the premises on November 8th. On December 22nd, 2023, respondent resigned as responsible veterinarian for Nikki's Place Incorporated. This matter did not go in front of the investigative committee, went strict to the board for your review and deliberation.
Okay, thank you. Okay, must be Dr. Phillip?
Yes. Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. If you can state your name for the record, then I can give you 5 minutes to address the board.
Dennis Phillip. So just to reiterate the case, in February of last year, the DEA came in for an inspection, and it was discovered there was a large quantity of tramadol that was unaccounted for in our drug logs. And this was not a drug that we dispensed, so it was really a surprise for myself as well as Dr. Schuster, the other veterinarian at the time. It was a surprise for us to discover that it was even being ordered. the clinic owner, who's not a veterinarian, admitted to me after the DEA agents had left that she had been taking the tramadol home. And as the owner, she did all the ordering and inventory check-in for the clinic. And then when shipments would arrive, she would take the tramadol bottles home and not account for them in the controlled substance log. Since this drug was not being recorded at the time of the shipment arrival, we had no idea that she was even taking it home. And then as for the known drug inventory, the rest of our controlled substance logs really seemed to be in order. After she admitted to the DEA she had been taking the tramadol, she returned it all to them the next day. As was stated, ultimately, the DEA did not take any further action and recommended we make some changes that we promptly implemented. We got a new controlled substance log that was double-checked by our two techs and a doctor. A new safe was installed with a key that only I had access to. I then started to only myself order all the controlled substances. We had annual written inventory reports that were scheduled to be performed, and we didn't have any further issues from then on. But just to prevent any kind of further dishonesty, I decided it would be in my best interest in December 22nd for me to leave Nick's place. I really do take my job seriously and try to do my best to be in compliance with the veterinary board as well as monitoring all the controlled substances. I really do feel like we were doing our best to stay in compliance with monitoring all of our controlled substances. It's just the deceit of the owner was just something we had not accounted for. I feel like I've learned a lot from this matter. It's certainly made me less trusting and more careful who I associate with. Unfortunately, I had assumed that a successful business owner of 14 years would not take advantage of me in the system.
Thank you. Ms. Solomon, you're the lead. I don't know if you have any questions.
I do have a couple of brief questions we may be able to deal with here. If not, we'll deal with later. You said that the tramadol was returned. How many of the 4,000 pills were returned?
That's a good question. I'm not sure what the count was.
And it's important to know how much was actually diverted and looking at over what time frame. So I think we're going to end up going to an informal on this. Over what time frame? And is that the appropriate dosage over that time frame for that amount of pills for two arthritic dogs? Those are my questions.
I just make a comment. I would agree with that if the person before us was the one diverting. Right? Like if
we don't regulate.
I know, but in this situation, the way I look at it is we have a veterinarian in front of us who this was happening unbeknownst to him. How much went on and whether it was the right dosages and whether it was given to animals or whether it was to people, I don't think he's going to be able to answer that now or at an informal. I just don't see how he's going to know that. He didn't even know what was going on. So I don't see how we're going to gain anything different based on the person in front of us.
So the only thing that Dr. Phillip can be held accountable for is what was within his responsibility as a vet at the clinic. To the extent that he was responsible for knowing, you know, what drugs came into the clinic and that that is his responsibility. But because he did not prescribe the tramadol to the person's dogs, it's not like it was below the standard of care, the prescription. That does not strike me as being his responsibility.
Even though it was his DEA number?
Well, again, his responsibility goes, the board needs to determine whether he should have known what drugs were coming into the clinic. That would be his responsibility. But not the prescription. He didn't write the prescription, so that can't be his responsibility.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think what Ms. Solomon wants answers to is the DEA has to take that out with the owner.
Okay.
And there would be no way he would know the number that was returned, because it wasn't returned to the clinic, it was returned to the DEA. It was surrendered to the DEA on the order. So the DEA can tell you how much they should return, but not the clinic. It never even, I mean, actually, other than shipping to the clinic, it was never there, because the owner confiscated it, never logged it, and took it home. So, you know, I have more questions. If I wanted to question somebody, I would question if the DEA has pressed charges against the owner. That would be my question.
I thought they
and that had nothing to do with this veterinarian or our board.
Okay, so Ms. Altman made, did you make an official motion, or was it just a comment?
No, those were just questions that I have, and unfortunately it sounds like Dr. Phillips cannot answer them. So in that case, I would move we dismiss with no violation.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2468 with no violation. Any further discussion?
Initially thought letter of concern because of the fact that obviously we need to pay attention to what's being ordered, but I think we've already learned that lesson, so I do applaud you for taking action and correcting it and knowing going further. Unfortunately, we have to not trust people as much. That sounds terrible, but
well, it sounds like you made the right decision too by moving on from this next. So, okay.
I think our responsibility here is to find, to decide if the respondent's actions at the time when it happened, if there was any violation that occurred with him at that particular time, not any of the other things. That letter of concern is what I was thinking.
But it does sound
like
that's been good.
Yes.
So we have a motion and we have a second.
Mr. Lohi said.
Okay. All those in favor of dismissing, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?